Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
After surviving one of the 10 more bizarre stories I've ever heard.
Wait. One of?
That was bizarre.
Well, where does it come? Where does it fall?
I don't know. I'm sure there's something dealing with criminal activity that I've heard in the past that may have been more bizarre. I don't know.
Because, I mean, if I'm going to do this, I'd like to be the most bizarre.
Oh, in a lot of ways you are.
See? Well, at least I've accomplished something.
And once again, you've told a story in which is now going to force everyone from Drew Kelly to Sean Carey to Mark Lawrence to me to Allie Stevens to Sarah Bartlett to Cody Jade. You know, they're going to put in something in the handbook about testing. I don't have time for that. Listen, it's just all because you take this in directions that make the company sit back and wonder.
Stand up for what you believe in.
What I believe in?
And if
I don't
you're
have time,
well, isn't it hypocritical to you know be verbally against someone's you know philosophy on racing and everything, and then directly support it by buying the product? Sure. Not me.
If I need Pennzoil because my car's breaking down, I'm going to buy 10 tons of Pennzoil and dump it in the car.
A car lasted another 10 years.
If I need Pennzoil, I'm putting it in there. If I can get a Ryder truck for 10 bucks, guess where I'm going?
Sorry.
Can't just do it. You never even met the guy. For all you know, he's given millions of dollars to help on animals. I don't know.
I'm sure he has, but that's beside the point.
I mean, really, I feel like I'm in the Water Boy right now, and I'm looking over at Adam Sandler who says, look, that's Captain Insano.
Don't make me open a can.
Now let's make a dramatic transition to bring in Kevin Kugler, Dial Global, and Big Ten Network. There's certain people in our business that I just look at and I say, you know what? A pro's pro. And to me, Kevin Kugler is one of them. Kevin, welcome. It's great to have you on the show with us.
Those are very kind words. Thank you much. I'm not sure I deserve them, but I'll take them.
Anytime. Won't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too many times it's the opposite. So anytime somebody says anything nice at all, I just run with it.
Yeah. I usually leave the station under the cover of darkness. The one thing that you develop along the way, a lot of people that can do well, versatility. For example, you have softball, baseball coming up, and it's not obviously not the only thing that you do. But to go from one sport to the next, football to a basketball to the Masters to baseball, explain how you change pace because the sports are paced so differently.
Well, you have to recognize what you're doing. And I'll be honest, it takes a little time to get into that groove. It's hard to go from a basketball game right to golf. I mean, that's a very extreme difference, and nobody does it better than Jim Nance. He does that every year on the television side. On the radio side, my golf is not as intense as my basketball calls. So you just have to recognize that the different sports come with a different cadence and a little different style. I mean, you, as a play-by-play guy, you know this. As a play-by-play guy, you are what you are to a certain degree. You
right.
call the game as you see it. You try to be as descriptive as you need to be on the radio side of things. But you have to acknowledge that there is a difference. I do a baseball play-by-play call much different than I do a football play-by-play call because the sport lends itself to more of a, you know, slow pace, more of a storytelling pace. You get the chance to ad-lib a little bit more. I think that's where doing sports talk has helped me a lot, is the ability to speak in long breaks without having to worry about a whole lot of stuff, because you learn to do that when you do sports talk, and I did, as I did for 12 years. So it's one of those changes that you make subtly without changing your style, but you just recognize going in that this sport requires me to do it a little bit differently than what I did that other sport.
Only a couple of times in basketball was I in a three-person booth. When you do the Final Four, you're with both Bill Raftery and John Thompson. Obviously, when the ball's in play, you've got the ball. But is there a balancing act that you have to go through when there are two analysts versus one?
Oh, there's no question. Because both of those guys, and Bill Raftery and John Thompson, are two of the most knowledgeable analysts in the game. John Thompson's forgotten more about basketball than either one of us will ever know. And
right.
To get his insight, as a play-by-play guy, my job is I dial it back a little bit. Perhaps I fill in more blanks when it's just a single analyst, more of the description, more of what's going on. It's a real nuts and bolts call for me when those guys are there. But you have to go into it. Everybody has to understand what's going on. They understand, and we worked together for 6 years now. So fortunately, we've got that rhythm. And I thought this year was our best year that we've had of the 6 years that we've done the Final Four as a trio. And they recognize my role, and I recognize their role. So I step out a little quicker from my call. And they're really good about going amongst themselves. It's almost as if they're having a conversation about basketball, and then I'm kind of filling in the blanks as to what's happening on the court. That's how I've approached it the last few years specifically. And it's really worked out well, because Raft is great at leading Coach Thompson into things. Coach Thompson then jumps in with his bursts of wisdom, and then I come back for the play-by-play. It is a balancing act, but it's one I've really relished and enjoyed over the last several years.
Do you take a different approach at all when it's a college football game versus the NFL when you work Dog Global?
Sure, you have to. College, the atmospheres are different. And to me, you have the ability as a broadcast team to be a little bit more, I don't want to say critical, because I have no basis to be critical of anyone who's playing football at a high level, because, right. You know, once Pee Wee League ended, that was the extent of the Kevin Kugler football career. So I'm certainly not the guy who's out there criticizing. But I think as an analyst and as a team, it lends itself to a little bit more criticism of something that a player does, at least in my opinion, at the professional level. I have a real hard time on a broadcast saying this sophomore quarterback did a terrible job. He has a horrible, you can say it's a bad pass, but I try not to get into the critique specifically of the specific player in college, because the backdrop is so different than the guy who's getting paid a bunch of money to play the game. And also the atmosphere at the stadium lends itself to a different call. College atmospheres, especially in football hotbeds like at Penn State or Ohio State or Nebraska or other places in the Big Ten, the atmosphere is so much more intense in a lot of ways than it is in many NFL cities, that it just sort of adds a different air to the broadcast.
Yeah, you and I have the exact same approach, so I know exactly where you're coming from. Although we do have photos of you and your Pee Wee football career, tackling form, not good.
I was great at handing out water, though, which was where I ended up at the end of my Pee Wee football career.
Hey, what steered you into this?
Yeah, you know, it was honestly the inability to succeed in broadcast here in business college. That was what pushed me into it. I always loved it, and I always loved being around sports, and my goal was to become a sports agent because I wanted to stay around sports, and I always thought, I appeared to have an acumen for business. Maybe I'll go through business college and go to law school, become an agent, because what the world needs, as I've found out, is more sports agents. That's what this world is lacking, is lawyers and sports agents. Fortunately, I was steered out of that by some horrible experiences in a couple of economics classes where I realized that I really didn't have the same business acumen that I expected to when I got to the collegiate level. And so I went into broadcasting as another way to stay in sports and be around sports. I always enjoyed the game and the strategy involved and the excitement of being around sports. Unfortunately, my God-given physical abilities weren't such that I could really make anything in the world of sports with an actual playing career. So I had to figure out a different way to get into it. And once business college kind of went flop, I said, well, let's try broadcasting. And I've been very fortunate to have it work out to this point.
You'll have softball coming up. You'll also have the College World Series in Omaha, your natural habitat, coming up.
Yes.
But that's also a lot of teams to get ready for. Obviously, you'll get sports information directors to provide you information, but what are some of the extra things that you'll do along the way to try and get to know the subject when you have so many teams that you have to broadcast?
Well, one of the things that you find out over the years is that guys who do the team on local radio know the team better than almost anybody. So you try to talk to as many broadcasters as you can, get 10, 15 minutes with them even, and pick their brain, get a couple of stories. Same thing with sports information directors. The internet is a wonderful tool as well for anything that we do these days. I can read the entire season's worth of stories about a team or an individual player from simple Google searches. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, these are eight teams usually in the College World Series that you've not seen much of. Fortunately, now every game is broadcast to the regional and super regional. So these next two weekends, I'll spend a lot of time watching college baseball, watching college softball, learning about these teams as best you can. You're never going to be on a national level as fully invested or versed as the local guy. But you try to find those little stories that you can weave in during the broadcast to personalize it a little bit more, especially on the college level. It's hard to come up with new stories about Tom Brady or about Brett Favre when he was playing, or Aaron Rodgers, or anybody, because their story is well known and it's told year after year after year. But these college kids, a lot of times, that's the first time their story is being told. And that I love that. I love the ability to take what was a local story and make it more of a national story, because there are so many great stories on baseball teams and softball teams, and it's fun to tell those stories, but you've got to find those stories, and that's where the prep work comes in over the next couple of weeks.
You referenced earlier in this interview about doing talk radio primarily in Omaha for many, many years, and I believe the middle of last year you decided to, with all the opportunities you have other places, to move on. In the end, was that the decision to get that because you just needed so much time to get ready for the games we're talking about?
It was. I had an opportunity that came up in the summer last year to do more work with the Big Ten Network and supplement my work with Dial Global. But I've got two kids, the two daughters, 10 and 13, and have been married to my wife for 17 years, and she's been a trooper through all this. She's a coach's daughter, so I always tell journalism students, when you marry, marry well. Marry somebody who understands the games are weekends and nights, because a lot of women don't quite get that, or a lot of men, I'm sure, on the female side don't quite get that when they're marrying somebody that, oh, by the way, I can't go to that wedding slash birthday party slash deal because there's a game that night. Right. But it was just one of those opportunities that I had the chance to be able to do play-by-play as essentially a full-time job, and it's something I didn't know if it would come again. The show is extremely successful. It's still on the air. My former co-host is working with another guy now, and they're still doing a great job. It was the number one show for a lot of years in Omaha, and it was hard to give up, but it was one of those things that if I didn't do it then, I didn't know when I would do it. And I thought, well, let's take a shot, see how it goes. It's been great. It's been a great year so far. I've been extremely busy. Did a ton of games, 35 football games this year between NFL and college, and a ton of basketball games. I haven't bothered to count those up yet, but it's been really fun. It's been different for me. I've had different time to prep, which has been interesting to kind of get a new schedule, but it's been a good move. It's been a good move overall, the chance to do more play-by-play, which is why I got into the business in the first place, is something I couldn't turn down.
There are certain venues that you go to in this job, which I think a lot of fans would love to be in your shoes when you go to that particular venue. What was it like for you the first time you walked through the ropes at Augusta National?
Breathtaking. I'll never forget it. It's one of my greatest memories that I've ever, of anything I've ever done. And I've gotten the chance to meet some amazing people that, a kid from Nebraska who grew up in a house that didn't have a lot of, grew up in a single parent home. My mom was a teacher, and we didn't travel a lot, and to have the chance to do all this stuff still just blows my mind. But the first time I was at Augusta several years ago, we get, as part of the radio crew, we get a couple of golf carts that we can use to go to our various holes and check our broadcasts and transport people around the course. Well, it was Wednesday night, the day before play began, and I was going out to the eighth hole to check our broadcast, make sure we got our equipment put away, and I'm all alone on this golf cart, and I'm driving up over where 10 is, 10T and 9 green. And the sun is setting, and I'm all alone at this moment on Augusta National. I'm driving a golf cart. The sun is setting through the trees. It's just as quiet as can be, and I'll never forget it. I'm sitting on that golf cart, and I stopped, and I just sat there for a minute. I thought, how unbelievable is this? I'm sitting on Augusta National, the sun fading in the distance. I'm all alone on this hallowed ground, and I'm watching the sun set before the first day of Masters competition. It's to me, it's the moment that I always think of when I think about how lucky I am to do this. And I always think of how many people who are right now doing their job somewhere wouldn't trade their job for that moment. And I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends have told me, you know, I'd trade almost everything I do to have that moment. And it's something I'll never forget. It's the most amazing place to be, and to be there alone on a Wednesday night was something I'll never forget.
We're with Kevin Kugler, Dial Global, Big Ten Network. Was there ever a point where, you know, I think there's certain sports which are natural to do, basketball, football. I think natural for anybody who loves play-by-play to do baseball at a point. Was there ever a sport that they handed you where you had to put a lot more into it prep-wise, had to put a lot more into it just to make sure that you were fully versed on the sport, and that, you know, it was more work than people would realize because it wasn't in your comfort zone at that moment? Maybe eventually it became your comfort zone, but wasn't there yet.
Two sports that I've done that weren't in, have not been, and will likely never be in my comfort zone. Wrestling. I did several wrestling duels a few years ago, which I hadn't the foggiest idea what was. My main experience with wrestling was the Hulk Hogan leg drop, and that wasn't happening in any of the wrestling duels that I was a part of. No one, there weren't ropes to climb up on and fly off of. So Macho Man wasn't running into the ring. There was no Iron Sheik. There was no Hulk Hogan. So I had that was jumping into the deep end of the pool with no life preserver. But it was worse when I was asked to do a rodeo several years ago. And, you know, I was taught at a very early age, never say no to anything. That was one of my mentors who I listened to as a young broadcaster just coming up. He says, you know, when you're young, never say no to anything.
Right.
You know, you want to be the eager guy. So I said yes to do play-by-play for a rodeo. And now they've never asked me back, so I think that can kind of explain why, you know, how that whole event went. But you talk about being out of your comfort zone. I grew up in Nebraska, but we did not grow up on a farm. So I had, you know, mutton busting showed up, and I'm watching kids riding sheep and trying to stay on these sheep, and I'm expected to broadcast this, and I have no earthly idea what's happening, or this guy has got to tie up a cow, and I don't know what's happening on this thing. It was by far the most nervous I've been of a broadcast because I had no idea what was going to happen when I opened my mouth. And you hate that as a broadcaster. You like to go in. You may not know everything that's going to happen in the game because obviously it happens in front of you, but you at least have an idea when you open your mouth what sport you're going to be talking about. I opened my mouth, and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what these guys were doing, and that was called survive and advance mode. I just wanted to get through that, and I did, and I've never been asked to do rodeo again.
I don't think anybody listening right now would know what to do with that. By the way, Kevin is a graduate, by the way, of the Ron Moeller tailgate because he did a blue-white game. I think it was with Glenn Mason, if I recall. And
yes.
Came down to the Moeller tailgate, joined Jack Hamm and me for that. And the next time you're here, we want to make sure you're a part of that. You are great to be around, and you do an outstanding job. Thanks a lot for the time you gave us today. I had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, I enjoyed it as well. Anytime, I'd love to come back. Thanks for the invite.
Kevin Kugler, Dial Global, Big Ten Network. I'm trying to figure out between the rodeo story and Captain Pennzoil over here.
I like the rodeo story. That's good.
Yeah.
Did he do? Was that last year that he did the blue-white game?
Yeah, did the blue-white game last year.
I thought so.
Stopped down, joined the Moeller tailgate. He's now a graduate of that. He knows what it feels like to be in the presence of Moeller hospitality. You never have. Yeah, I think your Pennzoil story would really go over big with the gang.
Well, last year, it falls on the same day as Bucknell's spring game, so I did the double last year.
Yeah, what a shame. All right, so...
Actually, it wasn't. It was a great football day for me.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, rodeo. I mean, here's the key in rodeo.
Uh-huh. Right?
If you're on the ground, that's bad.
That's a good point.
Meanwhile, your car is down to nothing and you need Pennzoil and you drive 50 miles to get Quaker steak.
It was about 20.
To get Quaker steak.
Ironically, I think that's what it was. I just knew it wasn't a yellow bottle and that's all that mattered.
Oh, you have to be kidding me.
Sticking up for what you believe in.
It's oil for your car.
But the money goes to the same place.
What about all the people that work there and, like, depend on their livelihood?
I have no problem with the people that work there and depend on their livelihood. My beef isn't with them.
So you won't get Pennzoil because of Roger Penske?
That's correct. Although I have loosened up over the last several years. I mean, after he had no cars in the Indy 500 several years ago, it made it a lot easier to, you know, not worry about it as much.
Were you dropped repeatedly as a child?
No, not that I recall.
That's the last statement, actually, the key one. All right, we'll come back. News is next here on News Radio 1070 WK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Been another bizarre day at the ranch.
What happened at the Sunbury Motor Studio today?
Oh no, here at the Chateau can't be any better. Coaches versus Cancer reception tonight, Medler Field, Lombardo Park. Looking forward to that. Dr. Girardi will be there. Timmy Doyle, my friend from BTM, will be there. Among many others, a lot of Penn State basketball alumni. Here at the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, it's 11 to 15, Humble's Wharf. And, of course, now I'd like to talk to sane people, so we have opened up the phone lines. I'm not going to get that satisfaction talking to the coast.
I don't know. It sounds reasonable to me.
Look, your car is breaking down.
Yeah, whatever.
Your car is breaking down.
It's not breaking down. It was a little low on oil. You make it sound like the thing was falling apart and the bolts were coming out.
Your car is breaking down, and you pull into a Texaco station expecting to get Haviland oil. They only have Pennzoil. You refuse to buy the Pennzoil because of something inside your head that says Roger Penske's a bad guy.
I never said that. I never said that.
If Penske's not a bad guy, then...
I said I didn't like the way Kart at that time catered to him. He had too much power in open-wheel racing.
So when your car is on the verge of not moving...
On the verge of anything. The low oil light came on. It's about a half a quart low.
And you drove 30 extra miles to get whatever.
25.
I
it's called standing up for what you believe in, Steve.
I feel like I need to be institutionalized here. What's going on? I mean, I'm sorry. No offense, but I mean, I don't agree with how China goes about its business, but look, I'm not going to sit there and read labels all day. Okay, I got to get this thing done. Dave Sunbury. At 800-795-9565 in the Hillshire's General Store Hotline. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Steve. If he doesn't want Pennzoil, does he want Quaker State?
Yeah, I don't have any issues. I didn't have any issues with that.
You know why?
Why?
It's the same oil. The same company.
Are you sure about that?
Dead serious, bud.
That is great.
Dead serious.
I'm going to look that up.
Go ahead. When you said that one, Kevin, I had to call in.
Wait, this was a lot of years ago as well. So. I don't know about that.
Oil City, like same a... oil, bud.
Well, it's the same town, yeah, but not
so
the same owner.
Oil. Just to say, the same person, matter of fact, owns it.
It's Royal Dutch Shell.
Same, I'm telling you, the same people that own.
See, I don't think it was owned by Pennzoil at the time.
Well, when you went into your rant about with Roger Penske deal.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure it was owned by Pennzoil, and they were joined at that time. I know Royal Dutch bought them at one point, but I think that was after my little incident here.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be honest with you, Dave, I don't even know if it was Quaker's thing. I just know it wasn't a yellow bottle. That's what I do know.
Well, sounds like Penn's before they went to the gray bottle.
I just know it wasn't yellow.
It was gray. The green ones is Quaker.
Right. But you are correct. At one point, it was owned by Pennzoil. You are correct.
Well done, Dave.
Well, I have you on the line, Steve.
Last call you get through, Dave.
Well, I have you on the line. You had your story time with Steve?
Yes.
Well, I was sharing an incident with a person about what happened to me last Thanksgiving. Now, I don't know, you've never seen me, but I used to have a beard. And this was like a five-year growth.
Okay.
So I'm up at Wise's in 4th Street. I do my shopping in the cash, in the registers that you can do for your own.
Uh-huh. But there's
two benches you can sit there. So I sit down and take a little rest. Well, there's this grandmother with two little children, a four-year-old girl and a two-year-old boy. Now, this little girl eyeballs me, and she comes running. She crawls up my lap and starts giving me a list.
She thinks you're Santa Claus.
Yes, it actually happened. The cashiers are busting their gut from 5 up to 14. And I'm sitting there. I don't know what to do. So I just, okay, I said, well, you're naughty or nice? Well, she said she was nice. And I asked when the little boy, first of all, I said, do you have any siblings? And she cocked her head like, what's a sibling, right?
Shouldn't you know, Santa?
So I said, well, do you have any brothers and sisters? And she said, no. And her grandmother pipes up and says, well, that's your brother over there. And he's there, crouched down, looking around the corner. I just saying, I don't know about this guy. So they come over, and I told her, I grabbed my register tape that I had in my bag, turned it over a couple of times, and said, well, I had to put you on the naughty list, but I moved you back over to the nice. And then I talked to her about a month ago, and here those kids got about 90% of what they wanted anyway.
Great. Is Roger Penske on the naughty or nice list?
Well, according to Kevin, it's naughty.
Yeah, you're
Santa.
I had to review this, Dave.
Hush up there for a second, okay? I'm asking Santa if Roger Penske's naughty or nice.
Well, I'd say nice, but...
There you go. Okay, that's all we need to know, Santa. All right. Hey, okay, sorry, Kevin.
Santa's getting coal in his stocking.
I told Kevin, says, I'm going to call tomorrow about another rant. Okay.
Oh, I tell you right now, in his world, it's one big rant.
Yeah, well, I got my own going on here.
There you go.
It happened this morning, so I'll tell you in a little bit about an SEC coach tried to bash the Big Ten.
Okay.
Well, they shouldn't be throwing stones because the old saying goes, when you point that one finger out, there's three pointing back at you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll catch on tomorrow. But when he said that was Penn's, the Pennzoil thing, I said, well, I got a call.
There's some days where I feel like the dude is circling a fogged-in airport. All right, Dave, thank you so much.
I really hope it wasn't Quaker State because Shell didn't buy Quaker State Quaker State Pennzoil until 2002. And this would have been, probably would have been about 95. That's disturbing. Just stop.
Ah, good. The silence woke me up. All right.
Oh, geez, I don't think it was. I don't know. Now that's going to bother me the rest of the night. Now, thanks, Dave.
Why? Why? It's oil. It's a quart of oil. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Did it come out of the ground? Does it make the car go? Okay, what label is irrelevant? The label means nothing. Put it in the car. Save the car.
It would be it would be like you buying an Ohio State T-shirt.
Oh. Look, I would buy an Ohio State T-shirt if I were freezing to death and needed to have one. I could throw it out later.
Wait a minute. Wait. Did you just say if I
was freezing, I would.
You would buy an Ohio State shirt.
Yeah, instead of getting sick and missing work, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, that hurts. Survival, man.
That hurts.
It's called survival. It's called survival.
Walk another 25 miles till you'll find another store. Oh,
yeah, may make it 4. Then you get to co-host the show with your kid. All right.
Yeah, that's starting to sound interesting to me now.
2 hours of bizarro world.
I just want to remind everybody that we do have a couple of things on the website that you may want to check out. If you're looking for the details in the lawsuit, we do have a link to that at stevejonesshow.com. And don't forget the Costas Tonight program that was on more like Costas this morning when it finally got done will be rebroadcast on NBC Sports Network at 7 o'clock tonight.
Okay, in all seriousness, I'll come back. I'll wrap up the show talking about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. Like a 2012 Ford Fiesta 5-door hatchback SE, call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. A 2011 Ford Fusion 4-door sedan with 4-wheel drive, just $14,992. 2012 Hyundai Veloster 3-door coupe, $16,899. 2010 Ford F-150 Super Crew, $25,998. 2010 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited 4-door Sahara, $26,994, and a 2010 Ford Roush Mustang 427R. Call for the price, 888-536-8017. These deals won't last, so hurry in. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and at our dealership routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Well, Kevin has inadvertently given Pennzoil and Roger Penske more publicity in the last hour than he realized.
Unfortunately, that's true.
All right, a couple quick notes. E. Gordon Gee, the president at Ohio State University, as I've referred to as the Larry Brown of presidents, and that's no put down to Larry Brown, just Larry Brown coached a lot of locations in his career, and E. Gordon Gee has been the university president a lot of locations in his career. Dude's been on the move a lot in his lifetime. He made a speech back in December, and his little speech, in which they have the tape of now, the president of Ohio State said Notre Dame was never invited to join the Big Ten because the university's priests are not good partners, joking that, quote, those damn Catholics can't be trusted, according to a recording of the meeting. He said the fathers are holy on Sunday. They are holy hell the rest of the week. You just can't trust those damn Catholics on a Thursday or a Friday, so literally I can say that. Yeah. I was asked, somebody said, you're Catholic. Yeah, I said, yeah. I said, you offended? I said, no, but the statement's ignorant.
not offended. It's just
not offended. The statement's just ignorant. I mean, it's just, you know, he's not exactly the most polished public speaker in the world based on some of the other comments he's made about the SEC and so forth.
Well, things that have been going on lately should teach everybody when the red light's on, beware. Even if you don't remember being recorded or even remember being at the wedding.
Like he did a press conference during the Jim Tressel issue that was, as far as I'm concerned, if I was an Ohio State alumnus, I'd have been embarrassed. Coaches in the SEC voted 13-1 to stay at 8 SEC games. They really don't have the power in this. Okay? They're going to keep it at 8 games.
You know who the one was that voted against it?
Yeah, it's Nick Saban.
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, and he gets it. I mean, he understands. He understands why they need to go. Because, as I explained yesterday, the SEC has a 6-1-1 formula with its 8 games. You place the 6 teams in your division. There's one designated crossover, LSU, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, and then the other one rotates. That means you don't play. In other words, it takes you 12 years to play everybody home and away. 12 years. Now, the Big Ten model of 6 with 3 on the other side, you know, in a 5-year span, you've played everybody. In 5 years, you've played everybody. In fact, you played in a 4-year span, you played everybody except for one team home and away in 4 years. Much better. Not even close in terms of the two models. And most of the teams in the SEC will take those non-conference games. And they'll schedule soft. Now, Florida will have Florida State. Alabama always schedules big. And LSU schedules big in non-conference. Okay, now for the lawsuit filed in Center County Court. This suit includes the Paterno family, several members of the Board of Trustees, several football players. And some members of the faculty, two former coaches, Jay Paterno, Bill Kenny. Football player, the trustees include Adam Talaferro, Anthony Lebrano. 9 ex-Penn State players, including Michael Robinson. And some faculty members, including Pete Bordy. I mean, they're all included in this thing. There's nothing subtle about the lawsuit. But as I stated in the opening half hour, and I'm going to close the show with this, it is something that I have had to talk about in the last year and a half. And I had to talk about it not only on this show, but to groups. And last summer, especially after the sanctions came out, the free report came out followed by the sanctions, the anger in the rooms that I went to was apparent from the moment I walked in. I mean, everybody friendly and nice and the whole thing to me, but when it came to the situation, there was a willingness to talk and to vent. And I allowed people to vent. I thought that was very important. At the end of the 15 or 20 minutes that would happen, and then, of course, that we'd turn our attention to the reason I was there, talk about the upcoming season, I told everybody this. So when you run into a situation like this, that many of you look out and you say, what can we do? What can we do? We're angry about this. What can we do? And in a situation like this, against a powerful entity like the NCAA and an investigative group that supplied the report, there isn't really a lot that, quote, the common man can do. You know, Kevin talked about, for example, you know, we've been kidding about it, but Kevin talked about Roger Penske and Pennzoil, so he boycotted Pennzoil. Well, you can't, what do you boycott here? You boycott the NCAA? You can't. So there's nothing really in this situation the common man, the average man or woman can do. this has to be fought, if it's going to be fought, by people with means. And I told that. I said, and there are people with means, as I explained to each group, willing to fight this. And it turned out that there were six different groups, and they came together and decided to form one, and then they filed this lawsuit. They did it in two stages, the Paterno Report February 6th and the lawsuit filed today. I told these groups that there are people with means willing to fight it, so you let them fight it. Now you're asking what you can do. I said, well, what you can do is this. Support the student athletes that are here now. Make a difference by being in the crowd. Make a difference with your support. Tell everyone how disgusted you are by child abuse. When there are fundraisers to help out abuse victims, donate. Then when it comes to the games, support the university you love and the players and programs that you love. By showing up 108,000 strong and supporting abuse charities and THON and so many other things here at Penn State, Coaches versus Cancer, which I'm involved in tonight, you make a statement to the world of what the true culture at Penn State is. And has been the true culture for decades. A standard that is set by many people in the history of this university, including Joe Paterno. And you carry that legacy on by supporting the players, John Urschel and Allen Robinson and Mike Hall and Daquan Jones and Malcolm Willis, Zach Zwinak and Bill Belton and Christian Hackenberg and you on and on and on. You support them. And you do so by being there in the stands for them and showing America that Penn State is stronger than ever. So that's what you can do. If you're angry about the situation, you now know that there are people with means that are fighting the situation. We'll find out what the outcome is. It's going to take a long time to play out. But if you are angry about it, it turns out there are people with means that are as angry as you are, and they have filed a lawsuit. Allow them to do it and then see how it plays out. In the meantime, you step forward and you support the values of Penn State that you grew up with, and you support the players and you support the program. Bill O'Brien's Nittany Lions had 50 players with grade point averages of 3.0 or better in the spring semester. He carries the same values you do.